Commander Mark Devine, welcome to the Pioneers of Insight podcast. Glad to have you here.
Jerry, I can't thank you enough for having me on. It's nice to reconnect. It's been a few years. Remind me where we met. Was it at a SEAL Fit event? Or
Bud's Training 170, Class 170, which is crazy.
Shit. Really?
25 years ago, yes.
I wish I could say I remember your face, but you didn't have a beard and glasses back then.
Well, you might remember this story. I'll give you one anecdote. Shark bait. So I had gone fishing. This was right before Diamond Recon. And I'd gone shark fishing. And we had caught like an 8-foot blue shark. So the guy in the boat chopped it up and he's like, why don't you bring it back for the class? So I brought it back for the class, stuck it. Remember those little fridges you have in, you know, Bud's class? Like stuck it in the freezer. And the power had gone out right before one of our inspections. So the whole place smelled like fish, right? So I remember Lieutenant Zeke came in and he was like, what the hell is that smell? And he labeled me shark bait for the rest of training. So I got, you know, my butt kicked. So the first section of the show, which my listeners are familiar with, is the show. And that is where you just give us an opportunity to hear how you see what you do every day. Because you're a number of things, which some of our guests might be familiar with. You're a businessman. You're a mindset expert. You're a Navy SEAL commander, retired, right? But what's more interesting for us is not to hear you like hit your resume out of the ballpark, but like get a sense of see what you do every day.
Yeah, thank you for that opportunity. And it is something that I have spent a lot of time thinking about is how people see themselves and how others see them and how those two are rarely the same and how both can limit an individual dramatically. And so I try to practice what I preach or eat my own dog food or shark bait.
Yeah.
And try to make sure that I look through the right eyes, so to speak. And so the eyes that I look through today are that Mark Devine is committed to helping individuals and teams save the world, in a way. I mean, it sounds pretty bold, but the only way that we can really move forward as the human race is if we all integrate and become whole. And as people integrate and become whole again, they get a sense for the power that they have and the potential to serve much more profoundly, you know, beyond their limited scope. You know, however they're thinking they can serve, and usually it's in the context of how they can make money. And so their care and concern expands, you know, from me, mine, my family, you know, my needs, my money, to kind of an organization that can then take care of a much broader population of stakeholders and the tribe and employees and the community, to, you know, organization, whether it's, you know, nonprofit, academic, or corporate, or even governmental, that has care and concern for the entire human race as well as Mother Earth. And so, you know, I reflect this in my vision for the future and how I can impact it through my work as well as my mission, which is to train and inspire 100 million people to become world-centric leaders by 2045. So that's a 25-year vision.
Well, I heard a number of things that it's intriguing me, which is you're carrying a couple identities around, and one is the warrior, but I hear a really strong servant in you.
Right.
I hear a leader. Servant. And those two things don't often come together, which to me, when I'm hearing a person talk about that, like you're talking about scaling your service to a level it's pretty remarkable, and you've been able to do a lot of it. Where does Mark Devine in his life story start to get a sense of the servant even matters? Because a lot of the people that are attracted to your work, Mark, they come in based upon the image. The sell-in is upon like what they see. Oh, this man's a leader, right? They fall in love with that persuasion piece in terms of Navy SEAL. But where on your path did that idea start to come into focus, and where did it start to become important for you?
It started to come into focus actually before I went into the teams, but it wasn't that expansive. What got me to begin to look inward in the way that we're talking about was Zen meditation. And I was very fortunate when I was, after I graduated from Colgate University and was in New York City, working for Coopers and Lybrand and, you know, banging out my MBA and getting my CPA and all that, you know, all this busyness, to have stumbled into a karate studio where I met a Zen master masquerading as a karate instructor.
And right, they do that.
They do, the good ones, right? And so Mr. Nakamura taught me how to meditate in Zen, and then we, you know, do these extensive immersive trainings up at Zen Mountain Monastery. And so I did that for 4 years straight. Most people don't know that about me in the, you know, the SEAL teams, that I did. That was my experience before I went to Buds. That process was a process of turning in, you know, and I often say you got to go in to get out, right? You got to go inward to get out of yourself. And so that process of turning in showed me that I had this archetypal like urge, and I think it's an archetypal energy that we all have. And it, there's different archetypal energies that you're going to express at different phases in your life, but they generally kind of coalesce into like 2 to 3 to 4 different energies, depending upon your, you know, what you come in with, right? You can have a discussion about whether that's epigenetics, DNA, or your soul, or all the above. So when I was sitting on the bench, the energy that I experienced was the warrior athlete, right? I was very athletic. I was venturous. I loved the idea when I learned about spec ops and fighter pilots and all that, about, you know, serving in, as a warrior. But I was just, you know, training to become a CPA, then to take over the family business. And so there was this disconnect. I write about that in my book, The Way of the SEAL, how I really came to this, you know, enlightening moment or awakening moment. And I, you know, then had to develop the courage and develop the stand to say, you know, I'm not going to do this, but I'm going to go for that and become a warrior and follow that energy, you know, so I could show up the way I was supposed to. And when I got into the SEALs, first the SEAL Team 3, and then the, you know, the various places I served in active duty and, you know, in active duty or the reserves, that energy, you know, still had the warrior, but became much more of a leader, right? And so I would say the leader began to dominate, and the warrior became, you know, almost a partner in that, in terms of archetype energy. And as time went on, I got off active duty, stayed in the reserves, and I became an entrepreneur. And I had a few inflection points that really kind of woke me up in the business world. You know, my first business was the Coronado Brewing Company. And so I kind of contracted, right, from warrior, leader. All of a sudden I'm transitioning in the civilian world and I got to make money. And I started to contract into survival mode again. And so I decided as an entrepreneur, I would do something fun and where I could get a lifetime of free beer. And that became the Coronado Brewing Company.
Big thing.
Which is a, I know, wasn't that great thing? I couldn't poke any holes in it at the time.
So let me make sure I'm tracking just for our listeners, because you're shooting that loud. It's awesome. So you start to get a sense that there's something more that needs to be expressed in you pretty early, right? Part of your journey is you're on a leadership track early. For those that don't know, I'll add some little pieces in here. Mark, you had a family that had a business, right? So part of the attraction for you into lining up into the MBA degree was because of that relationship. So here you are as a young man. There's a part of you that you reach a little deeper spot by going into meditation and thanks to the guidance of some mentors in your life, right? Mm-hmm. So you start to become a little more curious about how to express this new thing that's showing up, the warrior, right? So then you go, because that, we'll call that your first crisis. Your first crisis is like, this ain't enough, right? So what am I going to do next? You choose not just any program, you choose the Navy SEALs, right? Which ain't easy for you folks that aren't aware of that. So you exercise the warrior and leader, and then you step outside and you find yourself slipping back into an old pattern a little bit. I'm interested in that.
Yeah, like, so that would be the second crisis on my hero's journey, is I lost sight of the arc of where I was meant to head. I was contracted into, you know, needing to make a living again. I got sucked back to the first plateau on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And so within that plateau, it's a very constricting view. And all I could see was, I got to get a job. You know, I'm not working for the Navy anymore. I'm on unemployment. No benefits because I got off active duty at like 7 or 8 years. And, but I don't want to go back to the family business because I already ruled that out when I went into sales. And I don't want to go back to corporate America because I pretty much ruled that out. So in SEALs, as you know, can be very entrepreneurial. You know, we put our SEAL goggles on and we just go, 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 and we knock down obstacles, which is the strategy I use for better or for worse when I first started. And so, you know, I said, I want to start a business, but I wasn't then thinking, okay, well, what business is going to express Mark Divine as a world-centric leader, warrior, and serve 100 million people, you know?
Just for clarity, sorry to interrupt your flow there. So you had kind of put the awareness piece that you'd been developing in your back pocket for a while.
Yeah, right? I stopped my training, you know, all through, ever since I was 20, I did Zen every day and I'd practice, you know, all sorts of breath work and visualization and all through my SEAL days. And then I just stopped when I got off of duty because I was just so busy raising money and freaking out about, you know, is this business going to succeed and dealing with my partner / brother-in-law's extraordinarily dysfunctional relationship, which because of my family of origin was always a blindside. You know what I mean? I always figured out about a week later. But something didn't feel right for that entire week. And I'm like, what the bleep? And fortunately, you know, my wife could see it because she was a therapist. And so we had these, you know, nonstop discussions and I was in complete denial. You know, I thought I had the perfect family and I was a little bit ignorant there. At any rate, that's a whole different story. So that had
to blow up. It's an important part of the story.
It is important because it relates to something that's extraordinarily important for everybody to consider, is that the structures that we're in and the structures that we create will limit you unless they're carefully designed. And I was radically limited by the structure that I created with the Coronado Brewing Company. I co-created, I should say. My partners did about 5 minutes of work. I'm just being facetious, but that's what it felt like compared to my time and energy. And I raised $1.5 million on my own. And it was all my money and all my friends and family and fools. And these guys didn't put a dime into the business. And then when it fell apart with lawyers, guns, and money, they ended up with the business. And it's worth probably $50 million today. So I did them a nice favor.
So you take a big leap in your life to subject yourself through the trials and tribulation of becoming a true warrior, right? You step outside of it and there's a part of you that you kind of divorced yourself from that allowed you to take the biggest, one of the bigger steps in your life to become the warrior, which is that deep awareness piece. Mm-hmm. You're at this curious dividing line here. Like you have that identity of the warrior. Now I can hear some of that has been applied to the way that you're living your life and how you're working towards achieving in your business.
Tactical.
How are you communicating what the hell is going on to your family at that time? Like, what does it look like for you?
Well, my family was my wife and then my adopted, you know, 1-month-old kid. I wasn't communicating a whole lot to him because he wasn't asking the right questions yet. But my wife... Not only was she a therapist, but she was the sister of the two assholes I was in business with. So, if anything, there was nonstop communication. I mean, these guys literally tortured us and my president and chief master brewer. It was the strangest, most bizarre period in my life because the older brother, Ron, you know, would literally send us these nasty grams because this is back in fax days, you know what I mean? People don't use fax machines anymore. But the fax machine would spool up and both Sandy and I would get PTSD all of a sudden, you know, instantly. Because we knew that what would spit out of the other end of that fax machine would just be the most vile, you know, communication from this guy about what horrific person I was and how I was, you know, destroying the family and how I was just this evil guy who would come in and was trying to destroy the family. And I was, you know, whatever, you know, and they were just saying all these nasty things about me when in reality I was just every day show up and try to build the business, and it was profitable. The shareholders were getting a return on their investment already after only a few years. The place had a phenomenal reputation, and yet I was destroying the business, and I was ripping the family apart. It was them that were ripping the family apart. And but I had control of the business in spite of 3 years of proxy battles. And I don't know if the listeners know what that is, but you know, we had 50 shareholders and board of directors, and because I was one third partner, but I had raised all the money, so all the investors were kind of aligned with me, to include a lot of our SEAL team buds. So they had 3 years of proxy battles where they tried to take control of the business, and they failed every one of them. And so I maintained control, but it got so painful for my wife, basically, because it was her family that was being ripped apart. Oh, and by the way, small detail, her mom and dad got divorced. And the mom claims it was because of this / me. So my wife, one day we're walking on the beach in Coronado, you know, we're walking like down to Bud's and back, and she's like, I just can't do this anymore. And I said, but I'm gonna win, you know, we got this covered. You know, I had my Navy SEAL hat on, I was walking past the SEAL teams, I was feeling strong, and she's like, I can't do it anymore. And so I was like, okay, uncle. Worked out a deal with these guys and said, I'll sell you my interest, you know, for cost, basically, if you buy anyone out who came in with me, who was counting on me, if you buy them out, you know, at a small profit. And next thing you know, they were able to buy me out and anyone else who got in with me who wanted out, which included my family. So everyone got out whole. I took a little bit of money and just ran like hell away from that place and said, I don't ever step foot in Coronado again. Obviously, I have, right, because I was in the reserves, but I haven't talked to those guys. I've seen them. I haven't talked to them since then because they won't talk to me. I've forgiven them. I've moved on. I mean, that was 20 freaking years ago, 2002 or three, maybe not 20, but 18 years. And my wife hasn't either because they wouldn't talk to her either.
So here you are. You're a man that from the outside, everybody would say, you know, just based upon where you've been, you're destined to win, right? You step outside in your first entrepreneurial experience with the, well, let's say it, the meditator in your pocket or the deep awareness piece in your pocket a little bit. However, you're still able through that split and fragmentation of relationships, a mess of a business, taking on guilt. I hear that, a lot of guilt. You're still able to make a clean exit. What is it about Mark Divine that he was able to step out of that experience?
I don't like leaving things unfinished. I'm a man of my word. It's similar to like when I went into the SEALs, I was in the middle of a big client relationship and I was about 2/3 to 3/4 away toward my first degree black belt with the Zen master masquerading as a karate instructor. And I could have gone into the SEALs right then. I knew I wanted to do it. I knew it was the right path, but I said, I cannot leave all this stuff that I've committed to behind. And so I finished it all. In fact, it's kind of an ironic story, but I literally got my MBA from NYU, my certified public accountancy certificate, and my black belt all in the same month, October of 1989. And I was on the train to Newport, Rhode Island in November to go to Officer Candidate School. I was dirt poor. I had my karate stick, they call it bow, with me. And I got off the bus at Officer Candidate School with my bag and my karate stick, and the gunny sergeant comes up to me and he goes, what in the hell are you gonna do with that thing? And then he looks at me, he smiles, goes,
oh, I know what you were planning on doing with that. You were gonna stick it where the sun don't shine on it.
I was just like, holy crap, what have I gotten myself into? I was a CPA just last week. It was just an incredible experience to change your perspective like that, you know, from corporate America to literally Officer Candidate School and then into Buds. to say that I didn't do my training during the Coronado Brewing Company didn't mean I didn't still have the benefits of that training that I did before and at Bud's and as a SEAL. I was radically focused. I could solve problems. I wasn't a good decision maker, let's put it that way, but I was good at getting things done and finishing what I completed. And so when the brewery thing blew up, I looked at that and said, okay, I got to get out. Sandy needs me to get out, but I can't get out. I can't let the whole thing fall apart. I can't just walk away. There's got to be some kind of conclusion to this or kind of win-win outcome. And so I orchestrated a win-win outcome, and it took some time.
So you had enough, I hear this, resiliency. Yeah, that awareness piece doesn't go away. The reason I was asking the question is for the listener, it's valuable to hear when we find ourselves maybe not using parts of ourselves in the ways that we've used them in the past or our awareness in the past. So I think it's helpful to hear that story kind of leading up to that point.
What did go away? So let's say you are a Navy SEAL or you're a martial artist or you're just a listener and you've been practicing meditation and then you stop. Well, the practice of meditation will help you remain focused, will help you have, you know, you'll bled off a lot of stress and you'll be more effective. And so I was very effective. But the second, and for me, the most valuable aspect of the meditative practice, at least the way I did it, was that it connected me to my source energy, which had the information about how I was meant to be in the world and who I was meant to be. And without the meditative practice, I was fixed in time, yet with all those skills that had proven me. So the thing fell apart. I got out in 2003, and then I went to USD. But during this time, oh, by the way, I was also getting my doctorate in leadership while I was working at the brewery as the CEO at University of San Diego, and I was teaching a class in outdoor leadership there. And I got all the way up to my like 50 credits. You know, I needed like 55 or 60 before my dissertation. I'd written my dissertation proposal, and I had been getting calls to go to Iraq for over a year by the command. And finally, the call came, and I just extracted myself from the brewery, and I was like, you know, okay, it's my time. I can't say no anymore. You know, normally you don't even get to say no, but in the SEALs, the officer, reserve officers have a lot of flexibility. They did anyways back then. I don't know if they do anymore. So guess what? I went from Coronado Brewing Company / you know, USD, getting my doctorate, to war. And what did I do when I went to war? I started meditating again. Right? Everyone over there in the JSOTA, you know, for those of you who don't know, the Joint Special Ops Task Force, which is the headquarters of all Spec Ops where I work. You know, everyone, you know, usually worked from, you know, late at night, 10 o'clock or so, or 9. You know, early in the afternoon, actually, to be fair, but then the ops would start in the evening and then go until like 3 or 4. The teams would come back in around 4. And then they would get their sleep, and then they would spool up again. And so, you know, we were on that battle rhythm. So I would wake up around 10 in the morning, 10 or 11, and most people were waking up at that time. And a lot of the guys would go, or girls would go for a run or do their PT. And what I did is found a little place near this pond, which had one of old Saddam's, you know, little cottages there. It was all shot up, pockmarked with bullet holes. And, you know, the pool was just, you know, just the whole thing was a mess. But I found a little place, and I had a yoga mat with me that I tripped all the way over there, and I started doing this practice, which today is now a business for me, called Kokoro Yoga. It was an integrated personal practice that had some movement, had my exercise, had my breathing, it had my meditation and visualization all kind of integrated into the practice. I did it every single day while I was in combat. I guess I was fortunate enough to be able to do that because I was in one place. I mean, obviously we did a lot of traveling around the countryside and not visiting different places. And that is what got me reconnected with the practice. And I've basically been doing it every day since then. And that is also what showed me, in retrospective, why the Coronado Brewing Company was such a debacle. you know, it was the time on the bench that I was able to kind of like step back into my witnessing self and just see that much more clearly.
Here you are. What ends up being your crucible for you is not war, right? The crucible for you was outside your core identity, though. It was your, it was outside of who and what you were, which you had discovered previously before stepping into Navy SEALs. So you had, you maybe had that aspect of who you were. There was a smaller part of you that that could do well and succeed in business, but your path, I think it's a valuable thing to hear, is when you reconnected to the source of your identity, you began to get a clearer sense of your path and your flow in life. You move out of business. Now you're back in the teams. You're gaining a bigger, not just a sense of yourself as a warrior, you're re-owning that deeper part of yourself, exercising your awareness through meditation. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's where you began to get a clearer sense of where you were heading from that point on? And did things start to make more sense for you? What did it look like as you move forward?
Yes, because the particular practice that I have, that I've used to this day and I now teach in Unbeatable Mind is like a layered or a stacked practice. And I started it just by kind of stumbling on and building upon what I learned from Mr. Nakamura in the Zen practice. And so, you know, obviously the movement really kind of got all the agitation out of my body, you know, and every team guy needs that rigorous movement. And then I would have the asana and the, you know, and that would basically prepare me to sit and do the breathing practice. Now the breathing practice, the breath is the bridge between the outer and the inner, between the physical and the mental. And so then I would go into the breathing practices and I call it box breathing. And I would just use that. So this is similar to like yoga concentration training. Dharana, and I would then, you know, about 10 minutes of breathing, I'd be ready to do what I call insight, which is just sit and just reflect and just like let it's more, it's sort of like half insight meditation, half mindfulness. Just watch what's coming up, but let stuff that isn't relevant just go away. But anything that was relevant that came up, I would pause and just kind of like pierce it, you know, just really, really pierce it. And that didn't happen every session, but there's a few times, you know, you do this this practice after a few weeks or a month, and all of a sudden some really big ripples come up, and you're like, wow, that's a pattern. And I saw this pattern of how and why I got trapped in the brewery and some of the energy that I was, and I saw the patterns of my codependence related to my family. I saw the patterns of the alcohol, you know, that had gotten me in trouble in the Navy playing out there and choice of people to be in business with. It was phenomenal. And also, so at the end of that, so that was like like me doing my own shadow work, right? I became my own inner psychotherapist. In addition, at the end of the practice, of the stacked practice, I would begin to visualize my future. I call it visualizing my future me. And I would look into the future, and this is similar to what I did when I was back on the Zen bench, and I looked in the future, and I didn't see myself as the archetype of a businessman or running the family business, but I, you know, as soon as I resonated with the warrior energy, I could see myself as a warrior in different domains, and then I would have to try on the uniforms of the different domains, you know, until the one of the SEAL/Special Ops guy, like, fit me like a hand in the glove, and I'm like, boom. And it was, honestly, I know I backed up a little bit. That was the point that I stumbled across the Navy recruiting office and saw the poster about the SEALs and said, there's synchronicity right there. The universe is telling me I'm right. So while I was back in Iraq and I'm looking into my future, you know, I certainly didn't see myself going back to the brewery. There was not it, nor did I see myself starting another restaurant or microbrewery. And I didn't see myself going back to USD either. Now, check this out. This is the only thing I've never completed in my life is my doctorate. And I'm finally nowadays, you know, at 55, starting to think, okay, I might be ready to go back and finish that. But I couldn't see myself as a professor. And it just didn't feel right, right? Because again, the warrior, maybe there was a scholar part of me, but it wasn't an academic scholar. I wasn't meant to be sitting in a stovepipe academic institution. It didn't feel right. And so, I thought, well, those things don't feel right. What does feel right? And I had to do the same process. I had to visualize myself. And what came up is I got to teach leadership on my own, right? I've got to develop leaders. And I want to develop leaders with a warrior energy because I'm a warrior leader. And I think I know how to do it because I learned from a Zen master masquerading as a martial artist. And I was number one in my buzz class. So obviously what he taught me works. And so I'm going to go back and start teaching SEAL and Spec Ops candidates how to dominate their training. And I'm going to focus on my business and my family.
So you're on the family track, right? I hear the family entanglement in your story quite a bit. That probably led you through the whole finance path. You touch base with your warrior, you go into Navy SEALs, you step outside, you fall back into entanglement a little bit, but there's some warrior energy in that process. It's your crisis, you fall apart, you move into Navy SEALs again, you gain your power back. You have a sense of ground and suddenly you start to exercise an old you and you get clarity on where you're headed. Warrior plus leader and teacher. Do you remember the day that became clear? What were you doing? Because I'm curious, as a guy who was in the military, like how the hell is your fellow comrades looking at you? I'm imagining you in wartime sitting on, you know, on your mat and taking moments to get insight and clarity on where you're headed.
Nobody was doing this, right? Nobody was doing yoga and meditation visualization as a practice in the series.
I don't know what it looked like.
You know, I don't know. They, even when we went through Buzz, they didn't say anything about it then for a while and up to today. They now have a class they call the Big Four Skills, which are, you know, arousal control, which is breath control, attention control, which is concentration, visualization, and then micro goals. And then it's kind of like catch as catch can. Some instructors can teach it, usually the instructors who were trained by me through SEAL Fit, and then some don't. So it was really catch as catch can, but it's starting to change. The SEALs have been up actually observing our training. The head of the training, the instructor training qualification is my old platoon chief. He was up here just the other day visiting. We were talking about training SEALs and visualization and breath and all that. And so they're really getting on board quickly, which is great. And also recovery and, you know, the whole human performance program. It's so different than when you and I went through Buzz. At any rate, the day it happened, I don't remember the exact day because these things don't typically have a date stamp, right? It's more of a like an unfolding, and then you have some crystallizations and some insights.
Was there a moment? Was there any?
Yeah, and then all of a sudden you know. And what I would say is I knew by the time I left Iraq. Remember, I was on a one-year recall. I didn't go back on active duty, but I went back on active duty as a reserve officer with a one-year commitment. By the time I was done with that commitment, I knew, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that I was not going back to the University of San Diego. I was going back to my family or to my new business and be able to be there with my family to help, you know, marshal my son into the world and to be there for my wife, but to grow NavySeals.com and reorient it toward mentoring and training special operators to just dominate, right, as better warriors, as more integrated people, make better decisions on the battlefield, survive, but also make good decisions, right, so they don't kill the wrong people and, you know, give us a bad name. And so that was like the earliest version of this concept that we really need to wake up as a race and be world-centric in our view. And I thought, well, why not start with the warriors, right? Because they're out in the pointy edge of the spear, right? And if you're a SEAL or any Marine or Air Force and you pull the trigger and you kill a civilian, that's with you for the rest of your life. And it puts a black mark, and it could lose the war, you know, like it did in Vietnam. And quite possibly is one of the reasons why we've had such a challenge in Iraq and Afghanistan. Because we're leading with the sword instead of the fist, you know, or not the fist, but the palm. Or, you know, the bagel, right? Or the Wi-Fi. You know, if we led with the Wi-Fi and the food and the water and, you know, the sword was the last thing that we brought to the fence, then maybe we would have had more luck after, you know, the invasion. That's a whole different subject. At any rate, it was at the end of 2004 when I left active duty that I knew what my future looked like. All the details weren't there, right? And it was still a small version of what I'm building today, but it was the beginning of that. So when I went back home after Iraq, I got off active duty, which meant I was now a weekend warrior again. Didn't, you know, so I had a full-time focus. So, you know, I had the business rolling. I was able to take a little money out of that, but I was like, okay, I need to generate some money quickly. So I did two things. I launched SEALFIT as a Crucible training program. I launched a website and I launched this Crucible type event, which was modeled after Hellwood. It's 50 hours long.
This had to be the most difficult, most rewarding weekend that I've had. I learned a ton about myself.
I thought I would only get SEAL candidates, and I got people from all over the world. We still run that program today. Kokoro, we call it Kokoro Camp, which means whole mind or heart mind. An amazing event. And then I started developing a integrated program to train these guys, like what to do every day. And it looked a lot like what I did in Iraq, except now I also launched CrossFit gym about a year after that, so I could learn some of the new functional, you know, regimens and, you know, the barbell work. And because I never really was exposed to that. You and I, our generation, you know, really didn't have the exposure. Now the team guys just these shredded beasts. So I put together the program we call the SEALFIT operator workouts. And I had a little training group of guys, like 20 or 30 guys at my headquarters in Encinitas that we would train literally every day. And these operator workouts were just, you know, talk about PhD in fitness. They were awesome, just awesomely grueling. And then I was like, you know what? I want to create the version of some sort of mechanism that is kind of like the Shaolin monastery. Like if I went to China to train as a warrior, that's where I would go. I'd go to Shaolin Monastery and I would live there and I would train from, you know, 5 a.m. until 8 p.m. and I'd be a different person when I left. And so I created the SEALFIT Academy. And the SEALFIT Academy, when I launched it back in 2006 or 2007, was 30 days long.
I can see who's already burned through this level of resistance, because you're calm, your body's not shivering. Breathing.
And the students would live with me. I had an apartment at my training center and they would live with me.
Exhale.
And we would feed them. Inhale. And we would train for,
exhale,
you know, 15 inhale to 18 hours a day.
Exhale. Inhale. Exhale.
And then they would graduate with this 50-hour event.
I want you to start.
That would be graduation ceremony. We took one day off in 30 days, right? And I can tell you this, every single one of the guys who went to Buds after that program dominated Buds. They crushed it. So I was like, wow, I'm onto something. And what I found was that more and more civilians were coming, and yet they couldn't afford 30 days of time. And so I created a two-week program, and then I dropped it to 1 week, and then 3 days. I still have the three-day program. I can't do the 30-day program anymore because it just required too much of my time. At any rate, some of the civilian people were asking me for the mental training that I provided the SEALs. They wanted it kind of packaged, right? They wanted a book. They wanted something to take home. They wanted to read it. They wanted to learn about it. And so I decided to take this, to distill this training into a simple, repeatable, and understandable program for the SEAL candidates. And I knew I had to take the foo out of the kung fu, right? I couldn't say, okay, guys, put your Lululemon on. We're going to do our yoga class. Yeah, they would have asked for their money back.
Yeah.
Nor could I have said, you know, hey, you know, put your gi on and we're going to do our karate class. And I didn't do any of that. So what I said was, okay, you know, this section, we're going to do self-defense on, you know, Wednesday and Friday at 8 o'clock, we're going to do self-defense training. And then I would have another class called mental toughness. And in that, I would teach them breath control. I would teach them concentration, which looked a lot like breath control with a mantra. And I would teach them visualization. I call it the mind gym. They're like, oh yeah, mind gym. I get that. You see how this stuff just, like, it's, you know, when you're in the flow in a very creative state, stuff just kind of
finds
its way out of you.
I'm not going to let you get out of it that easy. No, there's a superpower that we're hearing in Mark, and I've sat down with enough people to know that what you're talking about is groomed. And I think what we can, my listeners can take as I help you wind down here, because I don't want to take up, go over time.
I thought we were scheduled for 3 hours.
Yeah, right. I could totally do this for 3 hours. Me too. I hear you've been able to integrate the healthiest aspects of who you believe you are, right? Like all along the way, even through your crises, which the crucible for you ended up being a business experience, but you're able to actualize things because of those, that relationship that you have with yourself. I hear this early experience that you made, you must have made real authentic contact with. Not everybody does. They may have those things in their practice, but they don't always do. Sure. And as you step through those experiences, you didn't lose momentum, you gained momentum because you allowed yourself to step back into your core identity pieces.
Right.
So as you now are in your flow, right, you're in your flow, you're totally in your flow, you're realizing everything that you've came across on your path. Where are you headed now? Because I think what's really intrigues me about you, Mark, and why I wanted to have you on the show is because you truly are a warrior monk, but there's a part of you that operates in everything that you do, and that's the heart. And you're able to get that across to the people that might not otherwise hear it from anybody else. So I'm interested to hear, is that your growing edge as you move forward? Is that part going to be exercised more? I mean, it's exercised quite a bit right now.
I think the heart is vast, right? That's your spiritual center. And, you know, I'm just barely connecting with mine. I appreciate your words, though. We grow in a transcend and include manner, right? If we're doing our shadow work, we transcend and include the best and shit can the worst along the way. My crises have showed me where my flaws are. And I have many, and I've been able to identify them, shed some light of awareness on them, and work on them, which has released energy of regret or of, you know, shame or guilt, which has freed me up to get to even higher heights. And so at every crisis, I transcend the crisis, deal with the shadow, and then I explode out of it with even more momentum. Every level, in my experience, every level has included, because we live in the Western world and we have to make money, has included some organizational structure and teammates to help me get that mission accomplished. And what I find is that as I continue to do my work, I'm growing and I start to grow beyond the organization yet again, and it's holding me back. And so there's only one way, two answers, right? You can contract again to stay in the organization as the leader, or, you know, to keep the organization going, or you can dissolve the organization, or you can step out of it. I guess that's three options.
Yeah.
I'm at that stage again. So I've got Seal Fit and Unbeatable. They're actually two organizations. I'm actually going to combine them into one. I'm going to hire a CEO in the next 12 to 18 months. And then I'm going to step into the next version of myself, which is going to be really the Kokoro version of Mark Divine. That's, you know, really diving into the heart, mind, whole mind, and to take my Kokoro yoga program out to the world, to go much deeper into the spiritual realm in my writing, you know, as opposed to dancing around it, you know, pretending it's leadership, you know, or something else.
It takes a lot of courage to say that.
Yeah.
Mark. I got credit for that. I mean, because you're also telling our listeners about something very important on the way out, and that is you're giving yourself permission to be something different. And that is part of the growth path. Not everybody does, especially in Western culture. And that's a valuable thing to hear.
Yeah. And I think it's critical for everyone. It's like, who are you becoming? And how do you know who you're becoming if you don't take time being instead of doing? And that's where silent practices really are so critical for us, especially in this chaotic, distracted world. Being and doing are equal, right? That's the yin and the yang, the masculine and the feminine. And we have to have both. But what I've found is, and this has nothing to do with gender, that real power comes from the feminine energy. real power. You know, most of my SEAL budget would be like, what in the freak is he talking about? What are you talking about? Real power comes from the feminine energy. You've got to be kidding me. Divine's lost his mind. But it's true. That's the generative. That's the creative. That's the, you know, like emergent energy. Whereas the masculine energy is, okay, I got this. I'm going to go build the next company, or I'm going to go fight the war, right? Or I'm going to, you know, task list myself to death, right? And most of us, our whole Western world has that male dominant. It's like 90-10, you know, male dominant energy of doing, build, task. And guess what? Everything that gets built, yeah, everything that gets built will get torn down eventually. So why not appreciate that and build with this creative destructive and build with a circular mindset instead of a linear mindset? Yin yang, we take but we give back more, and that's the only way that the human race will ever heal the earth. Right? It's going to be through spiritual, action and through a major transformation of how business and governmental leaders and academic leaders think about what it means to be human in our role stewarding the earth, almost like the ancients did, but from a different cultural context. So, one thing I will say is it's critical to do the work. You know, there was a while, and I still do to some extent. I mean, every day I check in with my ethos and my vision, and I have them written down, and I look and say, okay, this is who I am. Has it changed? Does something feel different? And this is where I'm going. That's my vision. Does that look clear? Let me solidify that in my visualization. And what happens is, like, I've turned that into a practice. Instead of waiting for the crisis, right, I'd like to try to go through the change gracefully now and architect it as best as I can. So instead of waiting for my company to fall apart or some crisis, I'm architecting the transition so that I can free myself up for the next transcend and include period of my life, which is, is already starting to happen. But you got to do the practice. I learned that. I'll never again leave the practice behind. You know, every day I'm on the bench meditating and visualizing and breathing. And every day, even this burpee challenge, right? My 300 burpees a day are an extraordinarily important part of my practice this year. You know, I committed to raising awareness and money for vets who are suffering, committing suicide. I know you've joined me on this journey, so thank you for your commitment and your support. You know, 22 veterans a day committing suicide. I mean, that's just a horrific thought. You know, it breaks my heart that these guys and ladies are suffering like that. We even had a client who committed suicide a few months ago. It was just really heartbreaking for everyone. But we know that there's a way to help them, right? Right? These ancient wisdom, techniques that we've been talking about can help them. Connecting them again with a team can help them. Not putting them in this archaic bureaucratic institution and doping them up with, Oxycontin and three different other types of antidepressants. So my point there is that every day I've committed to do 100,000 burpees myself this year, and I challenged my tribe to do 22 million burpees. It was definitely a BHAG, you know what I mean? I look back at that moment, I'm like, what the hell was I thinking? But we're already at 10 million. Anyways, I went off on a little tangent. But the Courage Foundation, me being able to work with that and to help more people and to choose to do things that don't really fit the business model, that's what I want to do. I want to write more. I want to, help out. I want to help kids and teenagers learn how to think better and to, develop mental and emotional control and feed the courage wolf and that kind of stuff. So there's a lot coming. I just need to kind of get to the other side of where I'm at right now.
You're talking about doing things that it takes the right person to be able to lead that sort of movement. And, and being a person that's been in the integrative health and healing movement for a while, having the weight that you have in terms of what you've been able to accomplish and showing that track record and then saying what you're saying about the integration of, look, health isn't just the physicality piece, and the health translates to a much deeper level. And it's something that we can bring back to everybody at every level of society, including our warriors. You're the person that has shown the capability to do it. And I appreciate that about you. All right, so here's the exit question. So let's say it's like 20 years from now. And you're sitting at, let's say it's in your own dojo, and you're relaxing, and you're getting the sense of where you want to head, and two grandchildren walk in the door, and they walk close to you, and you open your eyes, and they ask this question. Grandpa, we're hearing a lot about what success is, and we have no earthly idea what it is. What would you tell your grandchildren?
I would say success, Junior, is peace of mind. Peace of mind to know that you're loved and you're a loving human being and that you're doing something important and that what you're doing is uniquely yours. You're not living for somebody else. You're not living someone else's story. You're writing your own script. You're free.
Mark Devine, thank you so much for joining us on the Pioneers of Insight podcast. It was a pleasure.
Jerry, it was awesome. Thanks so much. Hoo-yah.
It's so funny to be able to come, you know, come full circle like this. I'm finding it a thrill, and I hope you enjoyed the interview.
It was terrific. Yeah. Well done. Bravo, Zulu.